Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
It's partly a shifting in mindset from, wow, what happened and why don't they want me, to what makes the next group really want me?
Today's guest, Melanie Petch, shows how to turn uncertainty into momentum, having honest peer-to-peer conversations that cut through corporate noise and transforming vague requests into clear, staged projects that deliver quick wins. You'll hear simple ways to meet clients where they are, especially when data and AI feel intimidating, plus a powerful networking story about leading with kindness that opened the door to long-term opportunity. Expect practical tools, mindset upgrades, and communication habits you can use immediately to win better work and build steadier client relationships. Now let's welcome Melanie Petch. Melanie focuses on practical data science and AI. Highlights from her career include driving client outcomes at Petch Analytics, Melanie's data science consultancy, designing and building custom applications with generative AI and LLMs with humans in the loop at Palantir Technologies, modeling and analysis of truly big data at the New York Stock Exchange, writing quantitative research and a book on commodity investing at Goldman Sachs, teaching at Columbia's School of International and Public Affairs, and serving on the Mechanical Engineering Advisory Council at Purdue University. Melanie, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Let's start off by talking a little bit about your career journey. What brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I reflected on that in the lead up to this. It has not been a linear path. As you noted, I'm running my own data science consultancy right now and teaching at Columbia. I started with my undergraduate degree in mechanical engineering at Purdue University. And as you just noted, I'm still involved with them in their advisory council. And my graduate degree is from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. I studied in the PhD in finance program long enough to discover that I was unready for academia and writing a thesis, and instead earned an MBA and got a job at Goldman Sachs, where I did quantitative research for 8 years. While I was at Goldman, I did research on two things, primarily commodities and quantitative equity portfolio management, and moved on from there to another sell side firm on Wall Street, then did some product development for a couple of asset managers. And then we came to the financial crisis of 2008, which took down pretty much my entire department. And as I was looking around for what might be the next thing to do, a former colleague reached out and said, "Hey, could you help me with this project?" And suddenly Petch Analytics was created. And I moved on to having my second client. My second client provided enough work to take up between 80% and 130% of my full bandwidth for 8 years. So that was a really fun engagement with a long-only equity portfolio manager doing quantitative research for them, and have since both hopped back into the corporate world for a bit and have recently hopped back out doing more of the data science and building applications around generative AI for folks. And so I think I can have some perspective on both corporate life and running one's own consultancy.
Yeah, and please share some of that. Love to hear a little bit.
Well, I was thinking about that 2008 transition being very relevant. I think sometimes as people have stable jobs and they're thinking, gosh, I could be having more fun or making more money or following my passion more if I stepped out and ran my own thing, it's a scarier proposition to move from a place of stability and here's the bi-monthly paycheck and everything is okay, but not great, to, and here's how it could be great. When you start from, gosh, my entire department is out there looking for jobs. How about some lumpy and episodic income for some work with some colleagues? And you're like, hey, that sounds great. Regardless of how much volatility and uncertainty there is, this is a great time to make a change. So I think one's current environment has a lot to do with how easy is it to step into, and now I will be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So what seems like the path of least resistance at the current hour?
That is a good question. This may be, it turns out that long-running client, the eight-year client, every so often, every year or so, would ask me, are you sure you would like to be a consultant rather than an employee? And I say, as we've discussed, I'm actually not sure. I'm actually completely ambivalent between the two. I think they are largely the same. I have a boss in pretty much the same way. I have a little more overt project selling, but if you really think about it, as I'm, you know, if I'm working in-house, I have that same amount of project selling. It's just less overt. And so people may not notice it as much. So it's very similar to me. And so I say to the client, I'm like, because I'm neutral to this, what do you prefer? And he's like, okay, we like you as a consultant. I'm like, great, let's keep going as a consultant. If that changes, let's have another conversation. And so when I look at the current period, I have some extra bandwidth and I'm out there having conversations, and people will ask me, are you looking for a full-time job or are you looking for project work? And I say, either one is great. I think it's usually easier to get started with project work, but however the structure works best for you will be great, which is partly why I've been in and out of the consulting and corporate world.
Yeah. But, you know, you're pointing out something that's, I think, is really important to this, the process, Melanie, which is having the conversation openly and honestly with the other party about what works best for each one so that we can find common ground.
Yes, absolutely. That conversation and having as many of those types of conversations out loud, honestly, and sort of in a very calm and listening way, right? I think you are very good at that. But I think this is a skill that we need in our corporate jobs and in our consulting world. One of the things I do for Columbia, the class that I teach is actually to advise a small team of Capstone students on a project with an actual client. So I am teaching them to be consultants, which is the really, really fun part. I'm transitioning them in their last semester of their master's program from here is a syllabus that has exactly what you need to do to pass the class. And like, there's no uncertainty about it. You just have to meet the bar and you'll be fine. And this is what you're used to. Here's the structure. To here's a client who has said, here's a vague project description that is the best that the combination of the client and I can do, and go do something useful. Go do something amazing, in fact. And everyone's kind of excited in week one. And then in week two, everyone's like, well, what do I do? What should I do next? I say, that is a great question. And they're like, well, what should I do next? And I say, well, I know exactly what I would do next. But the important part is for you to figure out what you should do next. This is the hard part. I want you to do it many, many times this semester in a supported environment. And it is also about having those conversations with the client that are like, well, what's actually important to you right now? What do you think we could help you with? And then if they say things in a language that is from their corporate environment with their topic jargon, we say, what do those words mean to you? Because if you tell us more and we understand more, we can actually do something that you will think is more amazing. And so part of my job is coaching people to have those conversations openly and with some constructive back and forth.
Yeah. Do you think it's easier to have those conversations openly and honestly as a consultant rather than as an employee?
I do, actually. I think that is a difference, that there is some freedom in not being fully beholden to one client for one's livelihood. There is also some risk. It is actually along the way, in after having jumped out and started my firm, it was after that that I started discovering that I actually am an entrepreneur, that I like taking that risk, that I like helping shape the chaotic, amorphous project idea into something that we could actually do in a month or 3 months or 3 years, whatever that time frame is. Here's phase one. Let's go build something and it will evolve over time. But that I actually really like having those conversations that are more direct and honest and open, rather than saying, oh, if I just keep my head down, things might go better for me. It turns out I'm not super great at keeping my head down. And that is just a feature. It's partly a strength and partly a feature that not all people like.
Right. The other thing that I know, I love your take on this, but my sense is that in the employee-employer dynamic, there is an assumption, and maybe it's reality, that the employer has more power. And as a consultant, you're running a business and you're solving a problem. And if your clients are corporate, right, you're B2B, you're coming in as a peer, and it's a peer-to-peer conversation where the power dynamic, yes, the corporation may be bigger and may have more money, but I think that there is more of a peer-to-peer dynamic than there is in the employer-employee relationship. When it comes to the negotiation part about the working project and the working relationship.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that is part of it, that it is closer to peer-to-peer, although there is still some of that power dynamic. And I certainly emphasize to the students that the client is always right and always has a little more power in that dynamic. It is closer to peer-to-peer. They are all, most folks are also more willing to listen to an opinion that is not quite their own when it's from the outside rather than from the inside. Even when people are hired into a corporation to be the outside view, I sometimes find that they said that, but they weren't actually hoping for it in the end. So it's a little easier.
Yeah, I've seen that too. Melanie, what do you think are some of the biggest roadblocks for corporate refugees when they first start out?
I think some of it is, I think it's actually important to take time to sort of mourn the loss of the thing that you just had, right? If you are a refugee, it's from something that was good. And so take some time to really come to terms with what has just happened and how things have changed. And then there's this notion of reflecting that I'm still incredibly valuable in the workforce, even though this one company or organization currently doesn't want me. Okay, there was some reason for that. And you may argue some percentage of that is related to the work we actually did, but some large percentage of it is not. And so reflecting that, hey, I'm still a great worker. What are the things that I could do that actually do solve a problem? How do I set myself up, as you were saying, in a B2B relationship where I represent a way to get something done that they really, really want to get done? So it's partly a shifting in mindset from, wow, what happened and why don't they want me, to what makes the next group really want me?
So Melanie, your own expertise is in data science and AI, which is clearly a hot field right now. How did you kind of figure out where your own best value lies and how to sell it?
Great question. It is largely in reflecting on what was the theme running through the work that I had done and enjoyed. And it turned out to be quantitative analysis and data science. And then most recently, I went to actually building software and building custom applications on Palantir software at Palantir for large government or NGO clients. And I had been always focused on here's a great big pile of data, or here's a pile of data to be in the abstract that needed to be analyzed to be made useful for a business purpose. And it turned out that that was more important to me than the topic. So it was okay. And someone pointed out, they're like, oh, you're very analytical. And this actually took me aback because it turns out, David, that I am analytical in the same way that I breathe. I just do it while sort of unconsciously, without trying. It's very hard to stop if in fact I tried, and I don't try to stop breathing. And so I generally don't also try to stop being analytical. And so having figured out that that was the thing that I bring, and then figuring out what are the modern topics, I was excited to be at Palantir at a time when using generative AI to make data and systems more accessible and useful was the big thing. And so getting some real experience in here's some complicated prompt engineering to get the appropriate answer for my use case from the AI or the large language model. So it was in discovering what am I actually good at that the world also values right now. And that's how we get there.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. The things that we are best at that other people often value a lot, it can be very hard for us to see. So yeah, having somebody else reflect back what they see as the value is a really important exercise.
Yes. I think the other thing that I bring to this, and we talked about it a little bit with the making an amorphous project into an actual project, is some ability to communicate with the client, to take on their perspective. I often ask my students to do this. Imagine you were them. What would you want? So in fact, this week for another client, they've expressed vaguely what they would like. And I'm like, well, if I was you, what I would actually want is a dashboard that makes this kind of data visible. And I'm going to mock up. This is what I think that looks like. And I'm going to do it from the mind space of, if I was that person, knowing as much as I know about them and their business, this is what I would want. And that will not be exactly what they want, but it should be a good way to continue the conversation of, oh, that part's amazing. I would actually have done this, or we don't actually use those words. There is no role named that in our firm. And you're like, okay, great. How would you do this? And sometimes I'll just continue that theme for one more minute. Sometimes the thing that we can do is just say the straightforward thing. Or one group at an NGO I helped by just creating a website that had a table of three kinds of their data, and in particular highlighted some anomalies in it. And the client's first response was, that's not my data. And I'm like, really? Tell me more. And they're like, we don't have those flaws. I'm like, oh, well, that's actually why I'm showing it to you. Because I think if you could actually see it every day, and then we could create a mechanism by which you could remediate those issues, then your data would be that much better and we could move forward. He's like, but it's not my data. I'm like, but let's dig in. Let's look at some examples and then see if you recognize it or not. But it was an interesting response. So I think sometimes the lowest hanging fruit of the value the data science can bring is on, hey, here's your data. Let's look at it and highlight some features of it.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I want to go back to what we were talking about before, where you got some feedback on your biggest value and your strongest skills. How has feedback, and also in a community and peer support context, been helpful for you with your own growth?
I think both sides of feedback, the positive and the negative, have been quite helpful. The reflection of the things that I take for granted, like, hey, you know, you're pretty analytical. And I'm like, well, I don't think to state that, because I actually think pretty much everyone can tell that. But sometimes before people meet you, they need to actually hear, hey, pretty analytical, and that communication is a big part of it. I think some of the growth process has been in working with folks who have a different level of understanding of data analysis or of what AI can do. I was talking to a former colleague a couple of weeks ago, and in the middle of our conversation about data science, you know, he's a lawyer and doesn't really do data things. We had projects together where he needed to be able to prove something to someone. So I had worked on extracting summary statistics from the data that were either supportive or not supportive, right? The data shows what it shows for him. But I had forgotten how not very data friendly he is. And it was so helpful that he popped out with, what is a data dictionary? And I'm like, great, that reminds me of where you are and where I need to start this conversation, because I forget that that is not a term that everyone knows. I kind of understand that not everyone has a good handle on Bayesian inference, for example, but the, hey, it's data and it's a data dictionary. And he's like, I actually have a problem today where people are asking me for the data dictionary. I'm like, oh, this is how that works. So realizing that it's about communicating with the actual audience that I have and learning more about where are they now so that I can meet them where they are, and then we can move together towards a better outcome for them.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Melanie, we've covered a lot of ground in our discussion. Is there anything I haven't asked that you'd like to mention?
There's one part that I was thinking about for the consulting, the journey to being a consultant or having one's own firm. I have an anecdotal networking story of how did I get the client that I stayed with for 8 years of largely full-time work. And it turns out I got it by not hiring someone. And I love that, because this is about how do we treat people as we go out and engage with them in conversation. While I was at Goldman, he came to us and interviewed for a position and told me that he really wanted this position, but that he was very far along in interviewing with another company and they were making him an offer and that he had very limited time to make the decision. And this was great. This gets back to our point about having the open and honest communication about the difficult thing. And he says, this is my timeline. I really want to work here. And, you know, I go and I check in with some other people and I come back to him and I say, look, we are not going to make it. We cannot possibly make your deadline. I think you are best served by going and working there. And, you know, let's stay in contact and we'll figure out whatever we figure out. So he goes and does that. And then someone from Georgia Tech asks him to give a guest lecture. And he says, oh, I can't, but why don't you ask Melanie? And I love that. And so I go and do this lecture at Georgia Tech and I meet the colleague of the client who will end up being my client for 8 years. And it's all because I was kind and honest and open with a guy who was interviewing to work for me.
And giving,
exactly. Like trying to treat him with honor, right? And compassion. And so I actually think that is a really reasonable thing to emphasize in these days when some of our conversations are very difficult and the world and the economy have challenges.
And way too transactional.
Way too transactional. Yes. Well, and on that point, I had a conversation a few months ago with a guy who sounded like he was having the compassionate conversation with me, the open and honest. And then we got to some actual, you know, hey, here's some feedback about what I heard from both sides. And it was a really good conversation. And then he revealed himself to be just completely transactional. And I'm like, oh, hot. Thanks for showing me that now. I'll go talk to someone else. I appreciate that a lot. So yes. So having it be more about let's relate as actual human beings, it can have some good consequences for both the other person and for you later.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's a really important point. Melanie, if someone wants to go deeper with anything we've talked about today, access any resources you have, or get in touch with you, where's the best place to go?
Oh, great question. There's my website, which is petchanalytics.com. I'm also easy to find on LinkedIn. Yeah, those are the two best ways to find contact info. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Melanie, for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. Share some great insights and great stories. My guest today has been managing partner and data scientist with Petch Analytics, Melanie Petch. Thank you, Melanie, for joining us.
Thank you, David.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community, a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.